Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another wonderful and exciting episode of the Anthology of Horror. I am your host and narrator, Springheel Jack, and as always, I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. Your support, your reviews, and your patronage mean the world to me, and I genuinely appreciate it. If you're easily offended, and this is your first time listening, I would encourage you to find a different show to listen to, and spare me the negative reviews on whatever platform you choose to listen to podcasts. With no more further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Anthology of Horror podcast, the podcast where we delve deep into the darkest corners of the human imagination to bring you the most bone-chilling tales of terror. I'm your host, Springheel Jack, and joining me today in studio is a very special guest, Eerie Bob. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. In this episode, we'll be exploring the spine-tingling world of Reddit's so-called horror stories. From the supernatural to the downright bizarre, we'll be diving headfirst into the asshole of Reddit to uncover the most terrifying tales the internet has to offer. Quote unquote. So sit back, turn down the lights, and prepare to be scared out of your wits as we take you on a journey into the unknown and probably the downright stupid. Without further ado, let's once again welcome Eerie Bob and get started today on Anthology of Horror. All right, so this first one starts with the confusing title of Scary Encounter While Trip Sitting. So this happened maybe around March of 2021. I was 15 and my sister was 17. My sister wanted to take some shrooms because it was nice and sunny out. I decided to tag along and just hang out with her. Me and my sister went across the street, because it's like a big grass trail that leads into another yard, plus our family members can see us from the window. We live in a two-story house. Inside of our house, there's actually an alleyway that's made of gravel. We're just having a regular conversation, talking about random shit. My sister is sitting in front of me, which means my back is facing my house. All of a sudden, I see a man who is just standing and staring at me. Mind you, he's 30 to 45 feet away from us, so the chance of seeing us from there is low because the grass is pretty overgrown. You'd have to really look and walk back and forth. I'm watching him, and he starts walking towards us. It freaked me out the way that he noticed me. I had seen him walking and looking forward like any other regular person on a walk, but he randomly stopped. He stopped, and he looked right at me, bruh, like how in the fuck. I look at my sister, and I'm like, hey, we have to go right now. She was so confused because she was obviously tripping. I said there's a man who's coming over here and we have to go. He starts hiding behind a car that belonged to my neighbors. It's right in front of the grass trail. I could see his dirty-ass, dusty boots, so I knew for sure he wanted to do something. So now at this point, he's on the grass, and we're already into our gate. We ran upstairs into my aunt's room because there's a window on the left side of the house. We watched him walk down the alley. And I noticed that he had something in his hand. It was a knife. He then turned around and walked towards the direction that he came from. I've never seen him again. And I always wonder, what could have happened? Scary world. Doesn't seem very scary to me, but that's just me. Well, that was fucking terrible. As always, Reddit is a bitter disappointment. Hopefully, Eerie Bob has something better than that.
All right, so after that flaccid one, this one is called Don't Sell Your Hair on eBay. I cut my hair every 3 or 4 years. I never do anything with it, blow dry, color, product, so it's what they call in the hair selling business, virgin hair. It's ideal to make hair pieces because it isn't very damaged. I sell about 10 to 12 inches on eBay each time I cut it and donate part of the money to Wigs for Kids, which makes hair pieces at no cost for young cancer patients. I used to donate my actual hair to Locks for Love, but they're super picky about what they use and apparently end up throwing a lot of it away. No fucking way, huh? I'm very curious about the weird things people do, so once I asked a buyer what she planned to do with the hair, she said she makes smaller hair pieces for people with partial hair loss. Cool. About 5 years ago, I listed my ponytail. Someone bought it for $50. Then I made the mistake of asking this person what they were going to use it for, thinking I would get a similar answer. He told me this very strange story about how he was volunteering at an after-school program at the library. They had read some book about cancer, and now he was buying the hair to show the kids what they make wigs out of.
They make it out of hair, you stupid fuck.
This made no sense to me. I thought that was odd, but people are odd. So I printed out the postage, packaged up my hair, and got ready to ship it. Then I get a message from him with a link to my profile on my workplace's website asking if this was me. He said he wanted to know more about me, why I was selling my hair, and so on. I freaked out. I googled his name. I found out that he was actually 16 years old, and his parents were high-empowered government attorneys. I cross-referenced this with property records linked to the address on his eBay buyer profile. I found out where he went to high school and even located his original birth announcement from 2002. I contacted him through eBay to say that I was no longer comfortable selling to him. I contacted eBay, who suspended his account because he was underage. He made another eBay account and sent me a message begging me to sell him the hair. I ignored him. I even had to eat the shipping cost, which was annoying. I thought that was the end of it. Days later at work, I'm checking my email. We have a VIP voicemail system that sends an email every time someone calls, and it includes some caller ID information if it's available. I recognize the name immediately from my background investigation. The kid had called my work voicemail from his mom's phone, and her name was in my freaking work email. The voicemail message itself was blank. I was very worried he was going to continue calling my workplace, so I had to tell my 65-year-old boss this entire story. Not sell my 65-year-old boss. Ooh, that'd be a plot twist.
That would be a hell of an eBay auction.
It was very embarrassing, and I'm sure it all sounded utterly ridiculous. Thankfully, I didn't hear from him again, that I know of. But I've always wondered what the heck was that guy thinking and what the heck was he actually going to do with my hair. Skip ahead 3 years later, I sell my hair again, and this time to a different buyer, who is anonymous this time. The transaction goes fine, nothing out of the ordinary. I did not ask the buyer any questions this time because lesson learned. Then 2 months later, I get this message, which I dug out of my email just now. I apologize in advance. I know it would be a strange question, but do you have any old hairbrush with hair or excess hair from over time you're willing to sell? If so, please message me. I'd like to buy it if available tomorrow. The moral of this story, people who buy hair on eBay are weirdos. Then again, I plan to cut my hair this month and put it on eBay again. So who's the real weirdo?
Where's that link at?
That's the end of that.
Damn, no link?
No link.
Bummer.
Says update if anything goes awry with the next sale, and update, there is no update.
Bummer. You'd think that you'd learn your lesson. I mean, you'd think you would know that going into the people that are buying your, you know, body's byproducts on the internet are maybe not people you want to associate with.
I mean, eBay is like one of, if not the most public online trading platform in the world. It's like, you gotta understand there are gonna be weirdos.
I think more weirdos than not are looking for hair for sale on eBay. I think those cancer foundations and shit have it figured out already. I think they have a source for where they're getting their hair. I know a lot of barbershops will donate the sweepings or clippings of longer hair.
What is it? Rule number 34?
I think so. If you can think of it, it exists. God damn it. It's like, have you ever applied to be a sperm donor? Have you ever been that broke?
No, but I'm not college educated, so...
I wasn't either. I just lied.
And it worked?
Yeah, fuck yeah. They still call me. It's like applying to be a Scientologist, dude. They never leave you alone. Which I've also made the mistake of doing.
No.
Yes. This next one is called Weird... Well, don't laugh at me, dude. I wanted to see what it was all about, so I went in there with an ex-girlfriend of the Pasadena branch of the office, and I figured I'd take one of those fucking tests where they ask you a bunch of questions and make you hold the stick. And so it was intentionally fucking with them, with my answers and with my job description, and I fucked with them with everything except, in hindsight, was a bad idea, except for with my name and my phone number. That was honest. But I gave them all just bullshit answers and fucked around on the test, and I still get phone calls from them.
Well, fuck.
Yeah, they're relentless. Much like the sperm donating clinics, where they offer to pay you $1,500 for a load, which I applied to when I lost my job a few years ago, and then just never went through with it because I thought about it and was like, this is just fucking weird. I'm not down. But moral of the story,
I think we do have a friend that donates platelets like once a month.
It's only acceptable if you are a fucking crack addict. You're going to have to tell me what friend that is later.
It's our same polyamorous friend.
Oh, well, good for him.
Well, he was broke for a while and the only income in the household, so.
All right, well, he has a family, so I can't fault him for that.
And on a lot of prescribed drugs.
And they still took his platelets? Oh, no, his significant other was on drugs.
Yeah.
Got it. This next one is called Weird Road Trip. You guys know me, I love a weird road trip. This weekend, I've been through the weirdest road trip of my life. So for a bit of context, I work with my mom, and we fairly often go on long road trips for work. This weekend, we were coming back from a business fair about 14 hours away from where we live. After about 1 hour...
What's the difference between a business fair and a job fair?
I don't know. Let's look it up. Business fair. A trade fair, also known as a trade show, trade exhibition, or trade exposition, is an exhibition organized so that companies in a specific industry can showcase and demonstrate their latest products and services, meet with the industry partners and customers, study activities of rivals, and examine recent market trends and opportunity.
Oh, so that's when, like...
all the people that sell hair on eBay get together at the Pomona Fairplex.
Or what is it, that SEMA show where, like, all the cartooners get together and they show off their builds for that year and what they could do for your car?
Yeah, probably exactly like that. After about 1 hour on the road, I noticed a blue SUV towing two bikes in front of me. I remember it stood out for me because the bikes were really nice ones. Eventually, this car overtook a truck, and it got away from us. After about 2 more hours, I noticed a car overtaking us, and it just happened to be the same blue SUV with the bikes from before.
But it was a ghost car.
Yeah. What a sad ghost, dude. The ghost of a biker towing his motorcycles?
He'll overtake you and slow you down.
I even remember my mom asking if we had seen this car before and me answering, yeah, he probably stopped for gas or something and we passed him. The thing is, along the next 4 hours, this happened at least 2 more times, even though we had stopped ourselves. At this point, I was already thinking it was weird, but this guy must make a lot of piss stops and like to make back the time by speeding. We were about 8 hours in when we got to a point where the road was completely blocked by other cars that had stopped. That's called traffic. We assumed that there was some sort of an accident in the road ahead, and that had stopped the flow of traffic. I didn't have internet to check, but I could still see a map of the area on my phone, so I started to check for alternative routes while my mom left the car to talk to some of the other drivers.
Did you ever go on road trips as a kid?
Yeah, all the time.
Where to?
Usually Pismo, but we drove all the way up the coast a couple of times. We drove to Vegas. We drove all over the place.
You drove, like, out of state a lot?
Not a lot, but enough.
So when I was a kid, before the 2008 recession, we did a lot of road trips, and I remember one time we were leaving Arizona, and we were coming back from Sedona, Arizona.
God.
And we got stuck in, like, bumper-to-bumper traffic, and then eventually it just stood still for, like, about an hour. And I was just a kid. I was, like, 8 or 9, so I'm in the car playing on my Game Boy, and then I decide to look up for some reason, and I just see like 50 cars in front of me all tailgating. They got the lawn chairs out. They were like, they had fried chicken out. It was great.
My dad got stuck in a traffic jam like that, where there was such a bad accident that it blocked the freeway for 4 or 5 hours. Yeah. They were just stuck.
Yeah. People pulled over on the grass, just started pulling out all their camping shit, and yeah, they were just tailgating for hours.
Jesus. We were, I think we were riding up to Washington once, and we got stuck in the desert in Oregon in the middle of the state for some reason. It was just completely dead completely, like, not moving. And I don't think you can split lanes legally in Oregon.
No, I think California is the only state where you can legally lane split right now.
So we were sitting in the desert for so long that the gas in the tank started to boil because the bikes weren't moving and they were running.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was the middle of the summer and we were just sitting there. It was fucking miserable.
Yeah. What'd you guys do?
Eventually just split traffic and the cops just waved us through and we got up to the front of the line.
Well, at least the cops were cool about it.
Yeah, I don't think they cared. All right. I found out that there was an exit from the main road about 200 meters from where we were. What does that mean in English, dude? How far is 200 meters?
600 feet.
Really?
Maybe 800 feet, give or take.
1,200 feet?
Because a meter is like 3.8 feet or something.
Thank you. And that I could use it to go through an alternative road that would take me back to the main one about 5 kilometers ahead. Mom got the same information from a truck driver who said it was a very narrow dirt road, too thin for his truck.
But 5 kilometers is 3 miles.
Yeah, I know that one. But we could probably go through it and skip the accident. She also found out it had been a pretty bad one and that they probably would take a few hours to unblock the road. Knowing this, we decided to drive through the side of the road to the exit and try to find this alternative path. We also switched seats, since I'm better with maps and my mom drives as well. It was already pretty dark at this point, but we had no problem finding this road. The thing is, it was a really bad dirt path, so we had to go pretty slow. We even reached a small wooden bridge that I had to leave the car to check if it was stable, and it was totally deserted. Wait. She checked on foot whether or not the bridge was stable? How big do you think she is? She's the size of a car? I doubt it. A bit later, we reach a split in the road, and I look back at the map to see which way to take. I figure out we should go left, but after taking a second look at the map, I notice something that made me even more creeped out than I already was. The river we had just crossed was called Rio das Mortes, which is Portuguese for River of Deaths.
Yep.
You speak Portuguese?
It's close enough, but I know the difference between, like, Spanish and, Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese, where if I read it, I could tell which language it is.
And it encountered the main road at the point we estimated the accident to be.
Oh, boy.
I decided to not
stick to Portuguese.
I decided to not say anything, and we continued to follow the path until we got to the main road, which we switched back onto again. At this point, the main road was deserted as well, probably because every single car going in this direction had stopped at the block in the road. After a short while, we start seeing a few ambulances go by in the opposite direction every now and then, which looked normal at first, but it eventually was looking like we had seen way too many of them for a single accident. They also looked exactly the same, but that's what you expect of ambulances. Yeah. The main road was also very dark at this point, and it went on without anywhere to stop for much longer than we remembered from our way to the business fair. Eventually, a car starts to approach behind me, and after a little while, it overtakes us, and to make everything weirder, it just happened to be the exact same blue SUV with the bikes in the back.
Oh, shit.
We eventually pass by a big city, and I suggest we should enter it to eat something a little nicer, even though it would make the trip longer, and my mom agreed.
I would love it if the blue SUV with the bikes in the back, it just like didn't pay off and they just kept bringing it up in the story. Totally not central.
Has nothing to do with anything. All the weird stuff stopped happening after that, but I tried to Google the accident when we stopped to eat again and later in the day at home, and I couldn't find anything out about it, which is pretty weird as well. The end. Wow.
Oh, boy, there really was no payoff.
No point to that story at all. Jesus Christ. All right, Bob, hopefully you found a better one. My two have fucking sucked.
This one is called, I disabled appliances in my house because my landlord refused to pay for the oil she used. I thought I won the lottery when I moved into a new house a friend had recently bought. She bought the house for the sole purpose of renting it out, and I decided to rent the top floor, making it my own little studio with a big roof terrace.
Wait a minute. She thought she won the lottery when somebody else bought a house?
Yeah, I guess she did.
These are the type of friends. This is like the Cato Canaan of friends, man. Just going to move into the back house of O.J. Simpson. This is... Never mind, I'm sorry.
This is like Parasite, but in your face.
Yeah, man. My housing prejudice is really showing in the last couple of episodes. I got to stop.
If you couldn't tell, we live in California, and, well, our housing market here is just the bottom of the fucking barrel.
Not for me.
Well, you're built different.
Older. Fatter.
I decided to rent the top floor, making it my own little studio with a big roof terrace. The bottom floor had their own outside area. That way it was explained to me the roof terrace was a part of my studio. The house used to be a hostel and was sold with everything still in it, and it was quite a mess. I got a few friends over for the weekend to clean everything up, but a few new things like outside furniture and make it look pretty. Okay. It was hard work, but afterwards it looked amazing, especially the roof terrace, which I turned into my own slice of meditation / lounge heaven. After about a month, my friend decided she was going to move out of her own house to rent it out and make more money and move in with us, but there was no room available, so I wondered what her plan was. Turns out she wants to take part of the roof terrace and turn it into her room, so I argued it was part of what I rented. Turns out she meant I could use it while she allowed it, but it wasn't part of my rental. Of course, we argued, but when it got to the point of fighting and losing a friend in a house, I decided to budge and adjust the roof terrace to fit her room. To her credit, she only took 60 square feet, but it was a sign of things to come. Long story short, she was cheap, was slow at fixing things around the house, always sought the cheapest solutions that would break again quickly, would put a timer on the hot boiler so there would often be no warm water for showers, would constantly complain about leaving lights on, etc., etc. But what finally pushed my buttons to my confession was when she took my motor oil, a full gallon, and put it in her car. What the fuck? She didn't even check to see if it was the right oil?
Nah, just dump it in there, brother. It'll work.
When I came home and saw it missing, she first denied it until she couldn't deny no longer. She then admitted but refused to pay for the replacement. We had a huge fight and I told her I'm going to look for a new house. In the weeks following, I disabled the washing machine, the oven, the fridge, the locks, and her car. She had to fix all of them, costing her way more than just replacing my oil. She never suspected it was me for some reason, and I left 3 weeks later never to speak to her again. I never told anyone because it makes me look petty and vindictive, but I'm not sorry at all. Maybe even a little bit proud that I stood up for myself.
It's not standing up for yourself, though. It's just petty, petty shit. She said it herself. It's petty and vindictive, which I respect. I'm very good at that, but...
So this was up... This was posted by I Look Better Than You. And
it all
you
tracks.
Know what? I respect the pettiness.
Yeah, I do too. I do the same dumb shit sometimes, but...
A fucking sleep in the bed you made.
This is why you don't rent houses from people that you know and like.
Also, if you're going to be a landlord, it's like you have to understand you can't cheap your way. Like, it's a huge responsibility. Don't do it if you're just going to cut corners.
Right. Just going to keep paying for the same thing over and over and over again.
And dealing with shitty tenants because you keep cutting corners.
And raising the rent somehow. This next one that I found hopefully is better than the last two, but it's called Ex-Friend I've Known Since High School Still Cyberstalking Me After I Cut Them Off 4 years ago. I'm 26 now. They aren't threatening me or sending me harassing messages, but rather mirroring my posts, copying me, and doing things to try to intimidate me. What is mirroring posts? Is that like when you post something similar that somebody else posts and... like rip off the motif?
Let's find out on Urban Dictionary.
Anyway, I cut them off because I'm a musician, as well as they are. They kept getting comfortable, copying a lot of what I do with my work. I'm doing a certain song, so they do a similar song in message. I'm doing a Halloween album, so they need to have a Halloween release. I guess that's what it is. They are mirroring the motif. I recently posted what I'm doing next, just a black and white single cover of me with a blonde old movie star hair, similar to Marilyn Monroe. Now they're doing something old Hollywood with all these black and white photos as well. Not knowing that it isn't even the same direction I'm going in after just basing it off the photo. They also have asked me and tried to use the same engineers and producers I've worked with. I was happy to recommend them at the time until it got worse, and I went to hear her show and her dad said, "When are you going to do that to me?" They will do intimidation tactics such as posting a picture in the same sweater I've worn countless times and in many of my posts and caption it with, "I'm coming for your gig." Coincidence? It's the caption and the same sweater I've worn on the daily, even when we were friends. I've outed them publicly and let others around them know because it's been 4 years and they can't seem to move on and get a life. And I am aware one old mutual friend that doesn't like me knows she is bullying and stalking me, but is condoning it and want their team to know. I look at their social media every 1 to 3 months to see if the stalking and infatuation is still happening because I do not this to them and have to let it go the way they treated me. It's very weird, and I posted solid proof as the town they live in has the most streams on Spotify and SoundCloud. Since they haven't threatened me or directly harassed me, I don't know what to do considering I put thousands into my work and want them to let it go and move on. Edit. I sent a cease and desist. What's that going to do? I highly doubt that any of this stuff is copyrighted. And if you uploaded it straight to Spotify, doesn't Spotify just own the rights to your music?
No.
Really?
No. I think it's like they own distribution rights. But they don't own the rights to your music. Like, they can't decide to change a song that you created in their image.
Got it.
All right. And this one is called "Weird Customer Turned Out to Be a Pedophile."
Oh, God.
So this was posted 3 days ago. On Saturday, I was working at my cashier job in the self-checkout when I encountered a very strange customer. It started when a somewhat disheveled man who looked to be in his 60s waved me over to his register for help. He began asking me for help ringing up his items, claiming he couldn't find the barcodes. I find this a little odd, but initially try not to judge, thinking maybe he just has impaired vision or some other disability. He only had two items, a drink and a candy bar. I helped him scan both items, but it soon became readily apparent that he had only asked me for help as an excuse to have my attention. He kept chuckling, and it wasn't an innocent or friendly chuckle, but one that sounded unhinged. I realized he was very likely under the influence of something, and I started mentally plotting to end my interaction with him as soon as possible. He also kept asking for my number, which I just awkwardly laughed off every time. I had to walk him through the payment process too, since he of course also pretended not to use the card reader in order to prolong the interaction. When all of that was finally over, he paid and walked off. I assumed he left. No such luck. About 2 hours later, it was time for my lunch break. As I'm heading towards the break room, I see the man again. He motions for me to go up to him as I told as politely as I could, "Sir, I'm not on the clock right now. I'm heading to my lunch break. You have a nice night." I quickened my pace on my walk to the break room, looking over my shoulder the whole way until I passed through the doors to the employees only area. My lunch break went normal, and for a while, my time back at work after that did too. That is until around 2.5 more hours later, when I suddenly hear one of our store security guards yelling, "Sir, I'm going to call the police if you don't leave. You are harassing my customers. You are harassing my employees. You cannot be here." When I looked in the direction of the yelling, lo and behold, that same guy yet again was the one being yelled at. I saw him run towards the back of the store and security chase him. I wasn't able to leave my area and I had to concentrate on my job. So I just presume shortly after that they caught him and escorted him out. One of my other coworkers who witnessed this told me that they'd been trying to kick that guy out for hours and that earlier he had been hitting on another female coworker of mine who I will refer to as Lacey. She didn't elaborate on what happened with Lacey, so I just figured the guy had pulled the same thing on Lacey as he did with me. All of this had been weird and uncomfortable already. Earlier today, however, I found out more details about the situation that almost made my blood run cold. While on lunch break, I was making conversation with a work friend of mine who I will call Vera. I asked Vera, did you hear about the creepy guy who was here on Saturday night? She told me she had not only heard about it, but witnessed much of his deranged behavior. She told me that when the man tried to flirt with Lacey, Lacey firmly told him that she was a minor. His reply, that's okay. I like 13-year-old girls.
Oh, God.
Yuck. This made Lacey feel so unsafe and anxious that she ended up going home early because of it. I told Vera that the man had tried to flirt with me, too. And Vera pointed out to me that the creep had probably gone for me based on the fact that I looked very young for my age. I realized Vera was probably completely right about this. I'm currently in my mid-20s, but I can pass for a teen and often get mistaken as one. Vera then told me that the man didn't end up leaving the store until midnight when it was closed, and even then he stood outside in the parking lot for hours after that. I thought back to what time it had been when I first encountered the man on Saturday, and I calculated that he must have been in the store for over 8 hours at least, seemingly doing little more than creepily flirting with the young woman he came across. To top all of this off, I usually walk home, but that night one of my coworkers happened to give me a ride. If she hadn't done this, I almost definitely would have encountered the man in the parking lot. Who knows how that would have gone.
Ugh.
Fucking yeah, yuck.
That's fucking creepy. That is an unfortunate part of working with the general public, though, is not everybody's well-intentioned.
Yeah, we've had some nasty men come in at the grocery store I work at.
Had some nasty men that worked at the grocery store with you.
Yeah, I did happen to get one fired.
Yeah, you did the right thing, though. We're going to take a quick break for ad.
Maybe I'll tell that story.
Well, you can tell the story before the ad if you want. It's a good story.
All right, so when I first started at my job, I was on the night shift, the overnight shift, but I sucked, so I got kicked off, and they sent me to bagging. So while I was bagging, ironically enough, at the self-checkout, there was a guy there. There's a guy there at the self-checkout, and he's an older man. I think he's in like in his late 50s, early 60s, and he's got a mullet, a salt and pepper mullet.
Did he?
Yeah, he had a salt and pepper mullet, and he always wore his work shirt, and at the time, it wasn't required. Because they were just trying to hire more people. And he just had all kinds of gold stars bedazzled on his collar. I don't know if our company ever gave out gold stars, but
they did. A long time before you started, they gave out gold stars.
All right. So, yeah. And he loved showing them off. But at the time, I was 19. And typically, the baggers are usually those who have special needs or the kids who are under 18 just because they're not allowed to be in any of the other departments in the store until they're 18. So we had this one girl who was 16 at the time, still in high school working for us. And I happened to overhear a conversation and he asked her how old she was. She replied saying, oh, I'm 16, you know, I'm still in high school. And he said, oh, are you still a virgin? And she said, yeah, I am. And he said, well, when you turn 18, if you want help with that, let me know. Just fucking, like, he worked with us. And needless to say, I reported that the next day, and he was promptly fired.
Yeah, good. Fuck that. That was a fucking creep.
I heard somehow he was able to maintain a job while he was still under investigation for the whole thing. But while he was able to still work, no store was willing to take him.
Yeah, you did the right thing for sure, dude. That guy was a fucking creep. We're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take this time to recommend a book written by a dear friend of mine named Sam Stoutman, a.k.a. the Scallywag Writer. He wrote a book called Pirates and Scallywags. It's a trilogy in the making, and he just released the second book. The Pirates and Scallywags trilogy follows the adventures of three pirate captains during the golden age of piracy. From plundering ships on the high seas to the wild nights and legendary scallywag haunts, Captains Umberland, Montpellier, and Estevez live life to the fullest. However, both the English and Spanish navies are furiously searching for them, committed to bringing them to justice. And in the shadows, evil forces are growing in strength, threatening to destroy all the pirates. I would love for you guys to purchase this book on Amazon. It's called Pirates and Scallywags, and it is, once again, by Sam Stoutman. So if you could please go on Amazon and order yourself a copy, you won't be disappointed. It is a great book, and he's a great guy. So please, reach out and support him if you can. Here's another hair story. It's titled, Man Ate My Hair at a Club. This happened to me when I lived in Prague. I was out with the girls. We had secured a bench in the back, which, in and of itself, is a miracle. I offered to go get drinks because this boat club filled up fast. So I get my friends and I a drink. I'm standing by the bar with two drinks balanced carefully in my hands. You have two hands. Why are you balancing drinks? I turned around to go back to my friends when suddenly this guy is standing in front of me. I was unprepared for what would happen next. I have to preface this with saying I had a lot of people come up to me in the Czech Republic asking to touch my hair. I have very tight curls. Not a lot of people in Prague look like me. I've had people ask to take pictures with me because of my hair. It was like my hair was some big celebrity, and every hairstylist in the city would find me and ask if I ever needed it, if I ever needed it cut to go to them. I even had a man follow me around a club, asking me, where is my fiancé? All because of my hair. But this man did something special. This man did something unthinkable. He reaches out his pale, rough fingers and picks up a big piece of my hair. He held it up, as if to examine it. Then he took his other hand, and he stretched the strands out and chomped down on my hair, whilst still attached to my head. He dropped his hands. He ground down, essentially chewing my hair for a second. I could see the hair dangling at an odd angle. His face was pretty close to mine, as I didn't have particularly long hair at this time. And then he lets go. I didn't have time to respond. I don't even know if he spoke English. He just fled. I wanted to wash my hair, but I was at the club. I stumbled back to my friends and told them what had happened. They were stunned. I didn't have another interaction with him that night, and to this day, it's one of the strangest things a person has ever done to me. Wow. Weak.
It is kind of funny just for Amanda, you know? Put your hair in his mouth.
Yeah, I guess.
On your face, too. Just no inhibitions about it.
I'm picking stinkers today, man. You're picking good ones. Why don't you do another one?
All right, this one's a quick one. I used to steal donations at church as an altar boy when I was young. So I went to Catholic church, and you know our disdain for Catholicism.
Mm.
So I went to Catholic school from first to seventh grade. I became an altar boy from third grade onwards. Their church was right next to the school, and when they needed altar boys to serve funerals, baptisms, and masses, they called us down on the intercom, and it was a great way to get out of class. I would also sign up to serve masses on Sundays. I would help with the collections and in the back dump all the money into one big basket. It's during this time I would stuff my pockets with cash. Started with $5, and eventually as time went by I got confident and would take the 10s and the 20s. The biggest masses for Easter and Christmas were the biggest collections because they do two rounds. On those days, I would take $300 plus worth of big bills and leave the $1 alone, serving multiple mass schedules in one day. I would leave church with $50 to $150 on regular Sundays, though. Mind you, this was around 1996 to 2001, and that amount of money was big for my age. Holy shit. Back then, that is a lot of money for a fucking altar kid.
Yeah.
I never got caught, but I just stopped doing it one day out of guilt. Afterwards, the scandal started blowing up globally of priests being pedophiles and suddenly didn't feel guilty anymore. It is what it is.
I think they can afford it. I doubt they even noticed it was missing.
The pedophile cover-up thing was insane, but the one thing that also got lost in the media was the how many priests were actually stealing money from the churches.
Really?
Yeah, like almost any parish you go to, and I know in the greater Los Angeles area, there's a history of like almost every church having a priest stealing money from that church.
Doesn't it say something about not stealing in the Bible?
It says a lot about that.
Jeez. I think I would have been too scared to steal money from the church as a kid, dude.
I did it one time in front of my family during the donations, and I just didn't put, I like faked dropping the bill in. I was like 6 years old, and it was $5. And I just remember my family guilting me until I couldn't stop crying.
I don't think they let us handle the money when I was an altar boy. I think they had people specifically that did it and handled all the money.
Yeah, I remember they had ushers.
Yeah.
They would always handle it, but then on like the big masses where they had the like baskets with sticks.
Yeah.
You could just reach out. I remember they needed help, so they would ask the altar servers to help, and that was the only time they let us handle the money. But boy, oh boy, did they let us handle the wine, the bread, the incense.
Yeah, all the stuff that doesn't matter.
The incense was scary. I burned myself so many times on that thing.
I used to pretend that I was allergic to the incense so I could get out of going to church in high school.
Oh, I just said I quit once I got to high school.
They made us go for high school because I went to a Catholic high school, so they made us go to mass.
Oh, that's right, you went to a Catholic high school.
We had to go to mass on game days. We had to go to mass I think once a month. We had a big school service.
Yeah, I think if you were in elementary, middle school, it was every Friday you had to go to mass.
Yeah, we did that as well. Speaking of religious shit, this one's called A Tornado Hit My Town. Angel statues appeared in our cornfields afterwards.
No fucking way.
A sleeping angel statue was in the cornfield next to my house. There was not only one, but many, at least four others, laid out in different surrounding farmlands. They had all appeared after the last tornado had dissipated. I had seen such things in churches and cemeteries, but never in our rural plains. Places flattened after the disaster. The pharmacy and hardware store ended up as rubble. The stone figures had intricate wings spread and their eyes closed in deep slumber. They seemed to be in pristine condition, as if they had camped out and found a new place to call home. Their granite flesh did not have any smudge marks from the swirling detritus from days prior. No one seemed to bother in wanting to know why they had shown up. The only other person who seemed to care, except for me, was a girl who sat one desk removed in the same row in history class as me. Her name was Shauna Nolan. Her red hair seemed to change different shades daily. I always wondered if she liked me, but I could never summon the bravery to ask. All I knew about her were her family details. Her dad was an Alaskan fisherman. Her mother was a retired paralegal who had become a full-time housewife. Everything else about her was a grand mystery in my psyche, which made me even more interested in her. I don't know why they're there, Shauna said. Nobody's thinking about them. How is it not in the news? No one else finds this weird? The girl she spoke to seemed far more interested in filing her nails than the discussion about the angel statues. I do, I said as she turned around to face me. One is only a few hundred feet away from my door. Have you touched them? Shauna asked. They're warm. Mr. Shea, who runs the flea market, found one out by his horses. I've heard rumors he tried to have it removed. Even with as wealthy as he is, he hasn't had any luck getting it off his property. The teacher shushed us with a smack of his ruler on the board, and we pretended to pay attention. I caught up with her in the hallway after the bell rang. We should try to figure out how many there are around town, I said. It might be good to find out if any are different from the others, or to see if there's anything they have in common. It could be an artist trying to show off their work, she said with a shrug. As you said, no one else seems to find it strange how this happened besides us. Let's check it out together. She stared at me with a blank expression for a second before she gave me a wry smile. Fine, she said, and she turned around and proceeded to head past a row of lockers. It's been a while since I've taken a long walk anyway. Meet me outside of the machine factory at 4 tomorrow. Our dinner table was silent. My father cut into his steak. His grubby, diesel-stained fingers clutched the silverware. He had taken
Diesel-stained? What? Stained with what? What part of the diesel was he stained with? The oil? The gas?
I would assume the gas, but what's he doing putting it on his hands? His undershirt still carried the smell of Armorall, mixed with his first lager of the evening. Oh boy, we got a beard douche. Mother kept her head down as she ate. I picked the potato salad on the side of my plate without much of an appetite. The TV was on in the living room with the volume turned down. The local news anchor reported on a robbery homicide. The crime had occurred at a Walgreens in Waterloo. It flashed to a local used car commercial. The salesman was a well-known con artist by the name of Hollowahan. He looked like Abraham Lincoln, if Abraham Lincoln had a flat-top haircut and wider eyes. Hey, Rob, you look like Abraham Lincoln if Abraham Lincoln had long hair and...
If my grandmother had two wheels, she would have been a bike.
Did anyone see the angels, I asked. Agent provocateurs, place those damn religious pieces, my father said. He downed his piece of meat with a long swig of beer. Damn government, using diversion tactics to keep our eyes off of where they should be. Their eyes have to be cameras. Surveillance equipment is put in there to see how many guns the locals are buying downtown. The fat cats are the top. The fat cats at the top are more afraid of an uprising than we are of gas prices. Or it was all China's fault.
Why did you write that in there? Or it's all China's. You literally wrote that in there.
He shook his head and closed his eyes before he took another sip. I scare myself with how right I am sometimes. It could be a college art show, my mom said with a soft voice. Young ones trying to get a bit of attention with their creativity. I've read about how those 3D printers are getting better all the time. Or maybe he or she's an aspiring sculptor trying to get their name out there. Nothing like getting your name out there by giving your stuff away for free. It's actually kind of my whole show model. I didn't ask for a differing opinion, Dad said with a leering stare. I'm going to check all of them out tomorrow, I said. Silence ensued and the air grew thick. My old man looked at me with an impetuous glance. It was the type of expression I had seen countless times. You will not do that, he said. No son of mine is going to have a mark of the beast placed under their skin because he went too close to an enemy spy drone. That's what they want, and I refuse to give our freedom to them. Do you understand, boy? Fine, I lied as I finished my meal. Later in the night, he passed out on his recliner.
What is in Waterloo that is so important they dropped a fucking spy drone?
Dropped hundreds of spy drones in people's cornfields.
What is going on in your cornfields, huh?
Sounds like someone's got a guilty conscience.
Got a silo nearby?
Maybe. I stole a bag of screwdrivers and a multi-tool off his work belt and buried them in the backyard out of spite. I did steal his Smith & Wesson blade. I placed it in my pocket with a sense of triumph. Shauna and I met each other in the parking lot of the decrepit factory. The place had been a source of economic survival and despair in equal measure since the Dust Bowl. She retrieved the tablet. The Dust Bowl was 100 years ago. Wasn't it? Wasn't that Great Depression era?
I met each other in a parking lot of the decrepit factory. The place had been a source of economic despair since the dust. Okay, but what is the factory? Factory for what?
It was a machining factory, she said, but it's closed down. She retrieved the tablet from her backpack, turned it on, and showed me the screen. It was a map of our region. The image had 4 different Photoshop pinpoints at various sections of town. Have you eaten? Shauna asked me with a serious gaze. You should have something in your stomach before we begin. I have a feeling there are many more of them if the rumors of the whereabouts are true. I'm good, I said. Perfect. I also have electrolyte packets and crackers if you start to feel weak. My God, not a lot of boys around here who eat fast food every day can keep up with me on hikes like this. Are you saying I'm fat? You're not. Only that you're far from my level. Let's go. Jesus.
Okay.
I love that, when you take somebody on a hike and they talk shit about how good of a hiker they are the entire way there, and then they just wash out after a mile or two of going uphill in the Los Angeles heat.
Yeah, there's also the one that really annoys me is like the enthusiasm to go hiking, and then they start hiking in 2 minutes and they're already complaining. It's like, this was your idea. You wanted to do this.
I think it's different definitions of what hiking is. Some people just think that walking around a flat nature preserve is hiking. But the definitions vary. If it's not up a hill, it's not hiking to me.
I had one girl that, actually my most recent ex, asked me to go hiking a lot, and then I realized it's because she'd like to veer off the trail so I could fuck her.
Throughout the rest of the evening, we found 5 more angel statues. One was by a fountain that sat across from the hospital. The second was behind the eye doctor's office, hidden by red oaks. The third was near a blood donation center on the outskirts. The fourth was 2 miles adjacent to the truck stop. That's where I'd put all my spy drones, dude. A blood donation center, a truck stop, an eye doctor's office, and a hospital. We ran our hands along each one and tried to determine if there were any anomalies within the build of each bust. We could not find any. We didn't check by the railroad, Shauna said. We went there along a bike path covered in pollen. We came to another cornfield. We strolled alongside it until we noticed a carved-out pathway. I suspected hoaxers of having attached boards to their feet to design it. Forming artificial crop circles was their favorite way to laugh at the media. We came to an unspoken agreement to follow it. The width of the man-made trail was proportionate in its dimensions to the angles. By then the sun was lowering and the stars were making themselves known in the wide sky. The maze zigzagged, the rustling noises were made, and they echoed in the stillness. We came to the end of the trail. It led to a greater opening. A propped-up torch on a stone pillar illuminated everything within the clearing. There were also a dozen or so people there, and they all wore brown cloaks. The Jedi's, brother.
Okay.
We were so silent that none of them noticed us. Sure you were. Shauna grabbed me by the arm and pushed me backwards. We ducked for cover, between stovers. Did you see that? She asked. I shook my head, and she told me to get a better look. I inched out and gazed at the center of the space where the fire blazed. I could not believe what was happening as my body became paralyzed with fear. The 5th angel statue was there, but its head was beneath an old medieval-style guillotine. Its blade shimmered.
Oh my God.
I recognized the man who held the raising rope. It was Holohan, the dullest used car salesman in the entire county, or so I thought. Pinned to the chest of his robe was a silver piece, and it glinted under the moonlight with the maiden. I squinted at it to make sure it was not a skull and crossbones. It was a clock. With a hand at the top center. I still had an uneasy sensation in my stomach. He let go of the cord and the blade dropped and the angel's head tumbled. Shauna muffled a scream at what she saw. A pool of black blood oozed from the open neck. Someone grabbed my hands and yanked them behind my back. I struggled and attempted to flee, but they threw me to the ground. I looked over and watched as Shauna yelled in terror. Burly men placed zip ties on both of us and paraded us to the center of their gathering strange spectacle. Their uniforms reeked up close of sawdust, sweat, and fresh dewy grass. Holohan walked up to Shauna and kept his face only a millimeter away from her eyes. Do you know who we are? He stood and approached me after. Did you two know whose ceremony you were interrupting? No, I said. We didn't do it on purpose, I swear. My children were busy tending to a most significant ritual, he said. I wanted to tell him his followers did not look like anything but grown adults to me, but I chose to bite my tongue. We are the 10 Midnights. See, plebeians like you don't know what we do. There are 10 heavenly bodies. They look to the average person like a planet within your sphere of existence. The 10th is not visible. In sacred cosmology, this is often labeled the counter-Earth. The average human eye cannot perceive it. It is full of monsters that we must kill at any cost. You too can be recruits, but only in return for a promise of silence. What you have seen here today must remain secret. We meet with one another 10 times every month. We do this to control the beasts. Are you interested in helping us? I looked over at Shauna again. It was an effort to see if we should play along with such absurdity for the sake of our survival. Yes, Shauna answered, we will, but please don't hurt us. Great, he said with a cackle. There are 10 steps to killing the evil one sent here from a different reality. So the angels are monsters, I asked. Definitely. Though they have not done anything to harm us, they require killing. Our slayings must happen at midnight. Okay, I said, even though I contemplated how high he may have been at that moment. Now that we're briefed, can you take us out of these zip ties? Not yet, he said as he walked over to Shauna and grabbed her. First, we need to make both of you a part of the group. The only way to do this is to make you feel the same pain that we did when we joined. I plucked my fingers with limited mobility I had in my back pocket, and retrieved the knife. I cut the ties and lunged at Holohan. I grabbed him by the lapels and took him down with a foot sweep. As the men behind me rushed towards me, I cut Holohan's left cheek and stood with the blade there at the ready. They cowered. Due to the lack of pockets on their cloaks, it occurred to me that they only had one weapon. It was the French beheading device. Anyone close to me will get it, I said, feeling for a second like my uncle, who used to tell me about his time in the military. I crouched and cut Shauna's bindings. Get them, you damn weaklings, Holohan yelled as he stood. Shauna kicked Holohan's knee and then landed another foot flat against the stone pillar. It moved and the torch collapsed. The fallen, dried corn stalks laid out by the wind all over the perimeter of the dirt circle went up in flames. I grabbed Shauna's hand, and we sprinted as one of the cult members yelled, an agonized cry as the fire engulfed him. We never returned to that area again. A few weeks later, Shauna and I went to her room and played video games. You haven't told anybody about what we went through, Shauna said, right? No, I said. You haven't told anybody that we murdered somebody, right? Exactly. I always heard about politicians within the community being in nefarious groups. We did not want to ruffle the feathers of anybody who could control the narrative. Do you think the angel got destroyed in the blaze? I asked. The fire spread so fast. If the blood we saw draining from it could have been gasoline. Holohan planned on killing everybody there that night. Crazy as he was, it wouldn't surprise me. The angels vanished, she said. No one's seen them since we left that field. Wow.
Oh. I mean, there is a 10th planet. It's called Eris. It is another dwarf planet, but it's further away than Pluto. And there's evidence of older civilizations talking about a 10th planet, but that's because its orbit is something like their years, like 8,000 or 10,000 years for us.
Interesting.
I wonder if those cult members were onto something, but I imagine it's just some Bohemian Grove shit.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like bootleg Bohemian Grove. Got another one, brother?
Okay, all right. This one's actually called Strange Man Teleports Across Town and Talks to Me on My Walk Home. Hello, I live in a small town about 10 minutes from Springfield, Illinois. I was at a friend's house and it was getting late and decided to walk home. I was in sophomore year of high school around this time. Me and two of my friends had been inhaling helium out of a balloon before this and laughing at our high-pitched voices.
That's what's up.
I lived on one end of the town and my friend lived on the other. His name was Keegan. I started my walk home about 9 p.m. Nothing strange for the first part of the walk, but I come to a main road or a highway in the middle of the town. I look both ways to see if cars are coming, and on my right I see a man walking out of the local bar. He had was quite round or fat kind of waddles when he walked. You need to check your grammar. He was round or fat and kind of waddled when he walked. Not sure if it was from his weight or if he was drunk. He had on a hat and a pair of blue jeans and a blue jean jacket. I think nothing of it at this point. He was a few blocks away. I cross the highway and then come across some railroad tracks again in the middle of the town. I'm walking home, but a few blocks away, I see the same man walking towards me from the opposite direction I'm going. There is no way he could have got in front of me, let alone blocks away before me. He starts mumbling something, not sure what he's saying at this point. I plan on walking past him to get away from him and to go home. He gets louder and says, "You a liar, and you should be ashamed of yourself."
I am.
I'm very startled at this point. He keeps getting closer, and I'm about to freak out. I have no idea what to do as he approaches me. Thank God I brought this wooden dowel rod with me to use as a joke with my friends. I ran at him holding the dowel rod I had shoved up my sleeve to hide it as I had to pass the police station and thought walking across town with it would be suspicious. He freaked out and said, "Shit," and hurried past me. I hurried the last two blocks home and closed the door and locked it. I have no clue how he managed to get in front of me. It shouldn't have even been possible to get ahead of me. It was like he teleported or something. He also slurred his words terribly. Still freaks me out because I've never had something like this happen. But even if he kept up with me, he would have been three blocks behind me, not in front.
It's amazing to me that the city outside of Springfield only has one road and there's no possibility of anybody being able to, you know, cut across and sprint up an alley to cut you off on your walk.
Yeah, it sounds like the man just like took a detour and ran super fast.
It's impossible, dude. There's only one street. This one's called The Girl Who Went Missing. 15 years ago, I awoke one morning to find my daughters had gone missing. My daughter, my mistake. She was only 16 and wasn't lying in her bed when I woke up. I called the police and searched for her. After all, that's
I'm
what
calling the police.
Call the police so that they can say that she probably just ran away and not show up. After all, that's what a good mother would do, right? I couldn't find her anywhere. I searched the house, the forest, her favorite places to go, but nothing. After all those years, nobody found even a trace of her. That was until one evening, I got a call from an unknown number. I picked up the phone, sat on the couch with my husband. He had his arm around me. As I picked up the phone, there was a moment of silence. "Hello, who is this and what do you want?" I said, almost choking on my words. What if this person knew our secret? I was scared. I felt like I couldn't breathe, like my lungs were closing in on me. I hoped this was a prank call. My stomach dropped as I heard this person's voice. It was my daughter, 15 years later. "Hello, mother. Is father with you? I can't believe I found your number after all these years." My mouth fell open instantly. This can't be. You see, usually a mother would feel happy hearing from their missing daughter. But not when I was the one who killed her and hid her body. Hearing her voice 15 years later definitely came as a surprise. I'm shocked. I don't know what to feel. My husband helped me. She was never a good girl. I wanted her gone. And I thought she was, until now. "I know it was you. I know what you did to me. How could you do it?" "I'm sorry. I just wanted you gone. You were so horrible to me, and I couldn't take it anymore." I started to cry. This was the daughter I had stabbed repeatedly until she was no longer conscious. And even then, I carried on. How was she contacting me? "I'll get you, Mom. Don't worry, you'll get your karma." She hung up as I started to panic, my heart racing. I don't know if that was really my daughter or not, but I guess we will find out if she comes for me. Until then, I'm hiding in my underground bunker that we had built years ago due to war threats in my country. I wonder if she will actually come for me or not. I guess I'll find out soon. This was it. As I sat in the bunker crying, I could hear her. I could hear her shouting, "Mother, where are you? How was she here? I'm scared. I can't breathe. I'm choking. She was outside." As she shouts my name, I start to question how she could even be alive. I made sure she was dead. I buried her in the back of the park. Even if she survived my stabbing, how did she even manage to survive the burial? "Elena, I'm going to find you." I just wanted to scream. I couldn't breathe. Everything was tight. I was panicking. Suddenly, her shouting came to a stop, and I heard her stop moving around. Tears uncontrollably flowed from my eyes as I held my hand over my mouth as tightly as I could, and that's when I heard it. I heard her starting to move the door to the bunker. "I'm here, Mother," she yelled, walking down the stairs to where I was, laughing. As she got down the stairs, she looked me in the eyes. She had a knife in her hand, and she was standing there, blankly staring at me. She looked exactly as I remembered. Long blonde hair, one green eye and the other blue. What's that called? Heterochromia?
Yes, sir.
Mm. Her eyes were always so beautiful, they were pure. She had mud covering her, and she was soaked in dry blood. Hello. I choked on my words, trying to find my voice from the panicking and the crying. Hello, mother. I've come to say sorry, she mumbled under her breath. She put her arms out for a hug, and I came over to hug her, accepting her apology. But then I felt it. The knife stabbed in my arm. She grabbed me by my hair, and I looked up at her, tears flooding my eyes. Why? I cried, looking into her eyes. This is what you deserve, Mom. I can't believe you could try and hurt me and expect nothing back. She laughed, still holding on to my hair. As I looked into her eyes with tears flowing down my cheek, she stabbed me right in my chest. I'm sorry, I managed to mutter before taking one of my last breaths. She carried on stabbing me over and over and over again. I finally feel how she must have felt when I did this to her. Wow. Scary.
Ooh. All right, this one is, I used to take garbage bags of food from 7-Eleven when I worked there. So years ago, I worked at a 7-Eleven and usually did the swing shift. When their branded fresh items like sandwiches and salads and stuff expire, you're supposed to throw them away. I would grab a new trash bag and put it all in that and grab all the other garbage bags and take them out at the same time. Garbage would go in the dumpster, but I would hang the bag of food on the fence hanging over the backside. When I finished my shift, I would go around the backside of the building and grab it and ride my bike home. I couldn't afford much food and didn't want to be on any kind of welfare because I'm able-bodied. It was my workaround, but years later, I still feel guilty about it. I guess I never really thought about it in the ways you are all saying. It's so out of character for me to do something like that, and I've just been feeling like a thief all this time, like I was unclean. But yeah, that was going to be thrown away anyway, so I shouldn't beat myself over it. The rest of this story is just him coming to terms with his guilt. Ah, fuck you, bro. What a waste of time.
All right, I think this is going to be the last one. It's titled, I don't know if I would have made it out of the woods if I had done what he wanted me to do. Hello. I just came across this subreddit, and gosh, some of these are terrifying. I do have a story of something that happened to me a long while ago, but in hindsight it was really dumb of me, and I feel terribly dumb now. So I've always been hesitant to tell a lot of people about it, except for my psychiatrist, LOL. And I always apologize for long posts, so it's hard not to hear. There were some other conversations had with this man named John. It was mostly him talking, but I left some of them out for the sake of length. This was a few years ago. It was pretty late, past 1:30 a.m. I was living with this boy who was pretty abusive, and he had gotten really jealous at this party we were at earlier that night. Not even an hour after we had gotten home, he tossed me onto our front porch and locked the door behind me. I was knocking and pleading for him to please let me back inside. I was still wearing what I had worn to the party, and it was freezing outside. I wasn't sure what I could do. He had my phone, purse, and wallet in the house with him, so I just sat on the porch crying. When he turned off the lights, both inside and outside of the house, I knew he wasn't going to let me back in. I felt so helpless and cold. I thought about knocking on a neighbor's door, though he didn't have many. But I had anxiety about waking any of them up and causing trouble for my boyfriend. So instead, I decided to try to walk to this gas station and motel, which was a little less than a mile away, so I could use their phone to try to call a girlfriend of mine to see if I could sleep over with her. Ironically, the road that I was walking on, which is called Donner Pass Road, so the freezing cold was fitting. But anyway, a little bit into the walk, wait a minute, I know where she is. She's at Truckee Lake. That is a cold, cold area. A little bit into the walk, this tall white pickup truck was approaching on the opposite side of the road that I was on. I tried not to make eye contact for obvious reasons, but then I heard the truck stopping and beginning to make a U-turn, and my heart started pounding. I just about froze up, but forced myself to speed walk at the very least. The truck pulled up to me, and this guy rolled down his window and asked what I was doing out so late. I told him how I was going to meet my friend at the gas station, and that she was expecting me. He sort of smiled and offered me a ride. I said no thank you, citing that I shouldn't hitchhike. He told me, well good, because I don't pick up hitchhikers, or anybody. You don't look like a hitchhiker though, you just look like you need some help. He just kept driving next to me, and I told him I shouldn't think he was a creep, and he pulled out what looked like a police badge and told me he had just gotten off duty, which is why he was in civilian clothes and out so late. He said he wouldn't mind driving next to me just to make sure I get where I was headed safely. I was naive and a bit too trusting of his kindness and his quote-unquote credentials. And when he offered me a ride again, I said that it would be nice because the gas station wasn't that far away anyway. He popped the door open, and I hopped in. The radio was low. It was messy. The ashtray was full of cigarettes. There were a lot of newspapers on the passenger floor. As I was moving my feet, some of the papers shifted, showing a pair of handcuffs, some coffee cups, empty water bottles, rags, a highly colored bandana, and some other things. He apologized, saying that it was the truck he took hunting, but it was super warm, so I was happy and I didn't mind at all. He told me his name was John. He asked why I was scantily dressed without a jacket, and I started telling him about the party and the fight that I had been in with my boyfriend. He was super charming and attentive. He even laughed that he could go back and arrest him. I asked about him, and he told me about his family. He was a young dad. He had a wife, a daughter, a son, and a dog. I told him it was like a perfect little family, and he laughed and said it certainly was. Then it had sort of clicked for me to ask him if I could use his phone, but he said no, because he had to save his phone battery. We were approaching the gas station, and he drove right past it. I politely said, "Oh, I think that's the one," but he didn't answer me. I felt sick to my stomach. My heart started pounding. I started getting choked up. My eyes started tearing up as I was looking out the windows and watching the lights behind us getting further and further away. It was hard for me to even speak, but somehow I murmured, asking if he could please turn around, and he ignored me. Whenever I would look at him, he just looked empty-eyed and emotionless, totally dead and glazed over. I looked back out the window and down at the road to see if maybe we were going slow enough that I could make a leap out of the car without seriously injuring myself. I remember always hearing, "Never go to a second location," but I thought about the possibility of jumping out and breaking an ankle and how it would be a lot harder to get away with one foot as opposed to two, debating with myself about the amount of snow on the ground. But then again, snow is hard to get along in, especially when you're not fully clothed. I felt so dumb now, because I wasn't even tied up or anything. I was just too scared to do anything, like there was nothing but trees, an empty road, and us. I was crying pretty badly at this point and asked if I could please borrow his phone again. I don't know why I even asked, and he told me to stop talking. He started talking underneath his breath, saying, "Girls shouldn't be out so late. You shouldn't have been alone this late. Look what you're doing to me, dressed like a slut," and other derogatory things. As he kept saying these terrible things, too many to type out here, I wasn't even responding. I was just crying and trying to think past the fear I was feeling. I remember the pair of handcuffs I remember seeing under the papers beneath my feet. So I used that little I don't know how to describe it. In like a scoopy motion, I managed to use my feet to scoop the handcuffs up and use my heels and toe to push them under the bottom of my seat as far as I could. I was thinking of different things I could do to try to help myself. Like if we were close enough to some upcoming lights or structures, if I ever made it out to them, I could just grab the wheel and cause us to crash into them. Or maybe how, if I got lucky enough for a real cop to pass us, I could grab the wheel and swerve, so he would appear to be a drunk driver and would get pulled over. I guiltily thought about the possibility of this man just having a weird night, and how if I did anything, it would hurt him. But I told myself that sort of thinking is just going to get me further into this mess that I'd already gotten myself into. He pulled off the road, where there were still woods on both sides of us. On his side, the wooded trees were closer to the road. On mine, there was a small gap, fully covered in thick, I don't know how many feet of snow, before the trees, thickly picked up maybe 10 to 16 yards away. He turned off the car and coldly said there was something wrong with the car and to get out with him. As he grabbed the keys, he was stepping out of the car. I grabbed onto the center console and cried and pleaded not to make me get out with him because it was too cold. He turned around to face me, his door still open, and shouted at me to get out of the car because we had to go check out the trunk bed hatch. I dug my fingernails deeper into the console, thinking my cries of no and head shaking would cause him to come around to my side of the car and drag me out to himself. I was crying and said, "Please, John, I'm so cold and scared. I was thinking of everything I ever heard. Humanize yourself. Use first names." He stared at me in this way I can't even describe to this day. I don't even know how to start. He got back in the car and I slinked towards my window, scared he would drag me over the console. He turned off the headlights, and everything looked dark blue. He stared at the steering wheel for what felt like years before lighting a cigarette and looking out of his window and back at me and then back out the window. He heard me shuffle my feet on the newspapers. I was adjusting my legs, but while still staring out the window, he told me that if I thought about running, he had a quick way to get me where he wanted me. And oddly enough, I was sort of thinking of running minutes before that, but reasoned that if he wanted me out of the car, then I should definitely stay in. Otherwise, he could chase me or shoot me. In case he had hunting rifles in the back, I didn't dare look. I'm glad I was right. I think at that point, I sort of hit some sort of bottom, and I started to panic. There was a numbness and an exhaustion. There was still the occasional hot tear or two, but I just remember being numb. I talked to a psychiatrist about this sort of thing, and he thinks it just came from my ex-boyfriend's giving me PTSD. It was dead quiet, but I just barely audibly told him that my friend was still waiting for me and asked about his wife and children, and he flatly said he didn't have a wife or children and that his house was empty. I asked him what he was thinking about, and he said, "I'm thinking about what to do with you." He didn't say it angrily, he just said it flatly and coldly, which sort of scared me more than if he'd said it angrily. I did start getting worked up back to the point of crying, and at that point he told me not to cry and turned the car on, offering some heat. I just cried and said I wanted to go home. Eventually he started driving and kept driving until we were approaching a gas station. I was gauging the right time to reach for the wheel, but before I could, he started slowing down. While pulling up, he told me not to tell anyone or he would find me. Then he told me all he was doing was teaching me a lesson not to hitchhike with strangers. He was almost coming to a complete stop when he told me to get out before he changes his mind. Before he could even get another look at me to assess my understanding, I was already down out of the truck and sprinting towards the gas station. The panic was overwhelming me, but when I stopped and remembered to try to see his license plate, I turned around and only caught the blur of the last three numbers as he was driving off. I ran inside and asked the clerk behind the counter to please call the police. I waited until the officer got there, and I'll be honest, I was a little scared it would be John. My fears melted away when the new-faced policeman got there. I gave him the description of John, his appearance, the vehicle color and type, the parts of the license plate that I could remember, and the fact that he said he was an off-duty cop just basically doing anything I could. I asked him if he could look at the camera, and the officer disappeared in the back for a little bit and then came out saying there was nothing on them. I asked if I would be able to look, and the officer said no, and asked me if I didn't trust him, and I told him that of course I did. The officer gave me a ride to my friends, lecturing me for hitchhiking consistently and repeatedly asking if I knew who Ted Bundy was. Of course I knew. I was just naive to think that it could never happen to me, and I was desperate to get out of the cold. Unsurprisingly, I never heard anything back about the report that was made, so I would try to follow up each time I did, and they never got back to me, aside from this one time that I was told my case number didn't exist, but that didn't stop me from trying to follow up. Throughout the months and years, I asked my friend, whose house I slept at on that night, if she ever heard of any weirdos like that since the incident, and maybe it had happened to her or somebody else up there, and she said no. So I sort of let it go and tried to tell myself that maybe he was actually just trying to teach me a lesson or something. I mean, I definitely never hitchhiked again, so it was a lesson, and it certainly worked. I never heard anything back having to do about the case. I never heard any other odd experiences up there. Maybe it was just one man trying to teach me a creepy lesson, but honestly, sometimes I think I tell myself all of that to help me sleep better at night. It all felt real, even if it wasn't real. I'm really glad I didn't get out of the car in the woods that night. This has also been super therapeutic to let out, so thank you so much for letting me post here. Edit. I'm not really the biggest fan of a few of you trying to inbox me saying you're John. So if you could maybe not, that would be super neat. Thank you.
That was a great one.
Yeah,
that was on my edge of the seat the whole time.
Surprisingly good. Well, all right, guys. Thank you very much for tuning back in to another exciting episode of the Anthology of Horror. I am your host and narrator, Springheel Jack, with Eerie Bob in studio once again. Thank you very much for coming on again, brother. I do appreciate it.
Thank you again for having me. I appreciate it.
You can find me if you want to reach out on Instagram.com/DukeLandis17. That is Instagram.com/Duke, D-U-K-E, Landis, L-A-N-D-I-S 17 on Instagram.com. And how can they find you, Bob?
I am on Instagram.com/EerieBob, E-R-I-E-B-O-B-B, at EerieBob at Instagram. And OnlyFans coming soon, but I have to update my ID. I no longer look like a 300-pound man, so I look very different. So, but be on the lookout. OnlyFans coming soon.
All right, guys, please take a moment to rate the show 5 stars, review it, share it with your friends. It helps with the search algorithm, and it would mean a lot to me. Please take the time to do that. It doesn't cost any money. It just costs a little bit of your time, and it would help the show a lot. All right, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate you tuning in, and until next time, stay spooky.
Yeah, all right, man. More feeling, buddy. Friday night, I just got off work. My boss, man, he's such a jerk. So after work, I went to his house. I ate his wife's pussy and kicked his ass. Eating pussy and kicking ass.
Eating pussy and kicking ass.
Eating pussy and kicking ass.
Eating pussy and kicking ass.
That's what I do. So I celebrated with some alcohol. Standing in the unemployment line, I see this young girl's bush and said it's breakfast time. Security guard said you can't do that here. So I kicked him in the nuts before I drank a beer. Girl at the counter said, do you want a job? And I said, okay. And then I ate her pussy. Eating pussy and kicking ass. Sure. Pussy in the night.
Yeah.
I eat a lot of pussy when I get into a fight. Yeah, all right. My dad. Thursday night, I was feeling pretty great. I was walking past the honky tonks on Broadway. I see this young girl, she's smiling at me. So I took her back to my place and I paid the fee. Took off the skirt, I knew that something was wrong. Well, there's supposed to be a pussy, this girl had a dong. I was bored, and since I'd paid anyway, I sucked his dick, and then I kicked his ass. Sucking dick, and kicking ass.
Sucking dick, kicking ass.
That's right. Sucking dick, and kicking ass.
Sucking dick, kicking ass.
Eating pussy, sucking dick, and kicking ass. Come on, buddy.
Eating pussy, sucking dick, and kicking ass.
Eating pussy, sucking dick, and kicking ass.
Eating pussy, sucking dick, and kicking ass. I don't want
my God damn it! Fucking play, motherfucker! Where'd everybody go?